Easy. Here, this bit of sky goes... Oh, well, it doesn't. Well, how about looking for that bit of tankard by the old man's hand?
And he was hooked. Jack was the most ill at ease. There was nothing in the library that caught his attention, and the puzzles weren't worthy of his time. He kept lying down on one of the sofas, closing his ruby-red eyes and dozing, waking then to walk cat-like to the windows that opened over the gorge, peering through them at the sheeting rain.
Something's sick here.
How do you mean, Jack?
Books and state house. No gnome baron would let all go like this.
You got any guesses to make?
No, Ryan. Just because you can't say exactly what's wrong, don't mean everything's ace on the line.
Agreed.
I get feelings here like I've never had any other place.
If you think we should leave, say so. You think we should stay, then stop going on about odd feelings.
It had been that kind of day. Lunch was brought in to them by Norman and three of the serving women. It was decent new-baked bread with some surprisingly good cheeses and an assortment of fresh vegetables and fiery spiced dips. Wordless, Christy watched the servants until they departed.
Their eyes are kind of lifeless.
And they all seem to me to be suffering from pernicious anemia. If I was their doctor, I'd be prescribing a course of iron and vitamins, and I'd want them to have their blood tested. They look as pale as parchment, and they walk in such a listless manner.
What's the uniform here?
Ryan munched a buttered roll filled to the brim with thin-sliced pepper tomatoes and bean sprouts.
Norman is a poem in tattered pastels. But the men and women we've seen all have a kind of medieval look to them. All wear either very dark blue or very dark gray blouses and pants. High-collared tunics, no hats. Soft shoes so you can hardly hear them moving. Men are clean-shaven. Women all have neat hair cut short.
On the table, the large jigsaw puzzle was slowly coming closer to completion. Only a large section of oak paneling at the rear of the landlord's parlor still needed filling in. Jack, driven near mad by cabin fever, went searching for Norman, and found him alone and asleep in the deserted kitchen of the big house. Jack asked him for the loan of a coat before returning to the library.
Told me couldn't find one after all. Savings must have took him.
It's odd. They invite us here and seem to want us to stay here, yet they hardly treat us like welcomed guests.
Give it another day. Then we can move on. Fireblast. I never realized that doing nothing all day could make you as tired as this.
Ford had also been affected by the boredom of the long wet day. He walked through to the library section and picked one of the undamaged books, flinging himself into an armchair and flicking through the dry, fragile pages for a few minutes. Then he tossed the book aside and hovered over the jigsaw puzzle, trying a couple of pieces, and then wandering off again, staring blankly at the array of pictures. He ended up by one of the tall windows, looking out at the rain, shading his eyes to peer down into the deep valley below them.
I reckon I'll go all the way around the bend and back again. I think I'm going to take one of my cameras and go and do some filming.
The light good enough? I would have thought it a little too dismal for successful photography, but what do I know? The answer to my own question is that I know precious little about the process of taking moving pictures. Though my father knew the redoubtable Matthew Brady, of whom I'm sure you will have heard, Master Ford, as one of the immortals.
Never heard of him, Doc.
Ford left the suite of rooms and didn't return until close to supper time, when evening had fallen and the rain had finally ceased. He was grinning broadly, wiping moisture from his forehead. The twin pearl-handled Colts gleamed in the soft golden glow of the oil lamps that Norman had lit an hour or so earlier.
Any success with your filming?
Think so. Just you all wait and see. Might have some surprises for you.
What? Tell us.
The best surprise is no surprise. Why not wait and see?
Oh, come on, Johannes. Tell us what you've done.
What you've done. Or what you've been doing. Not what you done.
Sorry.
Ford sat on the sofa and stretched out his long legs, peering at his mud-splattered boots.
Sure is foul out there. Just blowing over when I came back in. Promises to be a fine, clear night. Found me a back way in through an overgrown herb garden. Sort of a wicket gate. Unlocked.
His eyes were wide with excitement, and Mildred noticed that his fingers were trembling, as if he'd been through a shock.
What part of the mansion did that lead to? The kitchen?
through there. But you'll see on my film, I can't tell you. Too amazing, most bizarre thing. The cellars are real old, with a low roof and damp and smelling of salt and decay and iron. I'll process the film tonight after we've eaten and show it to you tomorrow night. And I swear, it'll blow your eyes right out of your head. Sorry, Ryan. Bit thoughtless of me.
Will you show the film to the family?
Mm-hmm.
Will they like it?
Oh, will they like it, Mildred? Well, now, I'm not quite so sure that I can answer that. Have to wait a while and see for ourselves, won't we?
Everyone except Ryan, sitting still on the sofa, had gathered around Ford. None of them noticed when the small side door to the room, almost hidden in the shadows, opened and then closed again.
Have you seen some of the family, apart from Elric?
Ryan wondered why the man didn't answer, unable to see Ford rubbing his fingers against the side of his nose, smirking at the others.
What's going on? Will someone just tell me what the fuck's going on?
Sorry, lover. Johannes has taken some film today that he thinks is special, double special. Something to do with finding his way into the cellars of the house, and with the family. Says he'll show them to us tomorrow night after supper.
When I've processed them, I doubt I'll ever take any better film for the rest of my life.
Ladies and gentlemen, dinner is served.
Norman's voice came from the gloomy corner of the large room. It made everyone start, as no one knew when he'd come in, or how much he'd heard. As the Outlanders were shepherded in by the ever-attentive Norman, they found that there was a new figure at the head of the long table, sitting with Elric at his right hand. There was no doubting his kinship with Elric. There was an empty chair to Elric's left. The two members of the family both stood, the older one more slowly, as if his joints pained him. Christie guessed that he was in his 40s, but he seemed much more frail than Elric. He was staring at his guests with such intensity it worried her. Elric was around 6'3" tall, and the new member of the clan close to 6.5". Both men were almost skeletally thin, with red-tinted eyes and hair as white as Sierra snow. Both had the same strange skin, pale as wind-washed ivory, with an odd delicacy to it, like the finest lace.
Do sit down, Outlanders. I am Thomas Cornelius. Welcome to Brampton and our home.
You the father of Elric?
I am.
They looked at each other with a flash of what Christie thought was anger. Then both of them offered brilliant smiles, revealing amazingly white and perfect teeth, one of the rarest sights in Deathlands, where most people had lost most of their teeth by the age of 30.
I am not his father.
Want to try a third time? Maybe both give us the same answer this time around?
The older Cornelius gestured with his hands to Norman to begin serving the food. Mildred looked away, feeling that the long bony fingers with the carefully manicured sharp-tipped nails were almost hypnotizing with their fine elegance.
Perhaps I should explain straight away to remove any ambiguity or confusion. Just who we all are and how we come to be here. I understand your unhappiness, Ryan Cawdor. We have been poor hosts. Indeed, you will probably not meet all of the family until tomorrow. Some are away, some are busy flying about their own business.
Doc was watching the fragile-looking man speak. There was a nagging suspicion about what was going on in Brampton and in the mansion on the clifftop. But this time, Doc knew better than to engage his mouth before his brain had functioned. From where he sat, Elric was clear in his direct line of sight, and he could have sworn that he detected a thin-lipped smile at Thomas's words.
I hope that Norman has looked after you. The weather has been inclement today, I'm afraid. We never saw the sun at all. I gather the food has been less than adequate. This is because our tastes as a family are not as other people, and the kitchen gets little practice for cooking for norms. Neither Elric nor I will dine with you here.
The first course was a mix of what looked like local trout, with bread-dried catfish served on a bed of boiled rice with snow peas on the side.
Mmm. Oh. Oh, that is so good.
This wine is from the oldest part of the cellar.
Doc snatched up the long-stemmed crystal goblet and swilled the pale gold liquid around, dipping his beaky nose into it.
It's a Sancerre. And a very good one, unless I missed my guess.
Oh, you're the very first visitor in the past 50 years to know that. Oh, wait until you try the Lafitte with the roast beef.
Thank you, Norman. Now, you came here through the MAT train system in the old Redoubt 47, did you not?
Ryan paused, a forkful of food halfway to his mouth. For 20 heartbeats, no one spoke a word.